Just a deep old idle animation smile?
I was smiling at Razor. He looks very comfy in his little bed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got two dog beds in here. One of them is used right now. The other one is just vigorously licking my feet right now.
Yeah, I don't know if we've addressed this, but Gizmo is obsessed with Dan's feet.
It's weird.
It's a really weird obsession. His feet and the top of his head.
Yeah, top of my head. I think the top of my head is a texture thing because I have the shaved head.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's an overall skin salt thing going on because, but I don't know, it's not like he's licking my knee or my elbows or anything.
Yeah, your feet must get a lot of stuff attached to it just by walking around, you know?
That's even weirder. It's weird to begin with, but then it's like, oh, I want to get the floor stuff off of his feet. That just adds like a layer of weirdness to
me. Another layer of weirdness is that he is not at all interested in my feet.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I don't understand dog
it's
brains
just Dan's
that
feet.
Well. Yeah, yeah. Hey, you know what I got in the mail mere seconds before walking into this room?
Some kind of cable.
Is that how boring my life is?
I feel like every day we're getting cables in the
mail. I would excitedly bring up a cable? Is that how, is this what getting middle-aged feels like?
No.
Like, I got new cable, honey.
Well, it would have been uncharacteristic for you to bring up the cable, but
that's true.
It would have been very normal for us to receive a cable. But
that's true.
What was it?
It was the Nintendo 64, Mario 64 Lego block thing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I want to start that soon.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I think I want to get I got the Lego block now. In terms of non-built things, mm-hmm. I've got the Lego block in box. I've got the Mario Airship in box. I've got the Saturn V Rocket in box. And then also I've got the giant Millennium Falcon thing that Professor Ticklebitch from the Discord sent in. And it's used, but he apparently deconstructed it step by step and put it into bags again to make it make sense with the instructions and stuff, which is
crazy.
Incredible.
Incredible amount of work to do something like that, because that is a huge build.
Yes, yes. He is a Lego guy. Did they say Lego heads? Is that what the kids call it? I just saw him saying recently that he got there's the new Fender guitar and Stratocaster that they just put out, and apparently that's a really fun one as well. But I'm going to get to building now. I've got several. I've been saving them.
We're builders, you and I.
That's what we say.
We are calloused from hours of manual Lego labor.
I pinched fingers. I pinched many a finger putting together a Lego. Or when you put together the two wrong ones that you really got to get your fingernails in, it's a little like, I like the little popper tool thing.
I love the popper.
That thing's great. It almost makes you, like, when you make a mistake, it's like, oh no, I get to use this fun thing.
Yeah, it's even mistakes are fun in Lego land.
Mm-hmm. I keep all my extras in a fanny pack.
Yeah, we do keep the extras there. At a certain point, we will have to make our own builds because we have, like, mixed boxes of just, like, various blocks and stuff and all the extras from all the different builds we've done. You can make something fun.
Yeah, we got a lot of extras. We went to that garage sale and we found like several just boxes of loose ones. So we really could do something with that. Remember, we went to a wedding recently where they had at every table, they had like individual little like jars basically filled with Legos. Remember, I tasked Ben Hansen with, I said, okay, I'm going to make you make a video game character using only the ones you have in this jar in front of you.
Yes.
And Tim, it has to be good enough where Tim can guess it in three guesses. Tim Turry, a good friend. And I told him it had to be Joel from The Last of Us. And so,
wait, you chose what he would make?
Uh-huh. And I said, I'm going to challenge you with something, and then you got to make it recognizable enough using just this.
Well,
you know?
Joel is pretty generic to begin with.
That's the thing. And I was wondering like how you're going to make this like just normal human-looking guy recognizable enough. And so, hey, if you haven't finished Last of Us 2, I'm going to say some spoilers, so you know, give me 30 seconds to a minute. Basically, he made a guy with a green shirt, but like, you know, couldn't make a face. There was no way to make like it. There wasn't even like a Lego head in there. Mm-hmm. But he gave him like a pole, like a gray pole to represent a golf club, and he took little red dots and put it on his head to make it look like blood and stuff. Yeah. So it was like a guy, a kind of a guy with a green shirt with kind of a golf club
well,
with kind of blood spots.
He wasn't the one holding the golf
club. Exactly, but like
it
how
was
else?
His leg.
Yeah, but oh wait, no, did he try to? Oh, no. He put it on his head. He like stuck the stick thing on his head,
okay.
And then he gave him like a little like can thing to represent like one of those like can like those makeshift explosives or whatever. Tim did not guess it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a valiant attempt considering like there was a very limited selection of Legos.
Yeah,
he did
yeah.
the best he could, but it was still terrible, and he should be ashamed.
No,
I'm just kidding. Ben Hansen, he's a great guy. He's
good man.
Very creative and extremely good at building impromptu Legos.
Check out the MinMax. I think it's at theminmax.org.
MinMax, two N's. That's,
yes.
Patreon.com/MinMax.
There you go.
Two N's. And if you join at the whatever tier, you can comment in Shangri-La, their Discord, which Jeez. Is supposedly the greatest place on the internet. It's very welcoming,
well,
a lovely community.
I think you
that...
and I know that our community at our Discord and our Patreon is our...
we're neighboring towns in the same county.
That's true. Friend of the site, MinMax.
That's right.
And Ben Hansen. Yes, yes. Are you doing that? Do you have any Legos? You got the flowers, right?
I have a few in the queue. I have the right. flowers that you got me, which I which I'll probably do next. I did Seinfeld recently,
yes.
and I have the next Assembly Square thing, the bookshop in Assembly Square.
I feel like that's your big one you're kind of keeping in the chamber there. I think that's the Millennium Falcon for me, where it's like, I know if I'm ever ready for, like, once I'm ready for a big build, like, this is the one I'm going for.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. We're trying to come up with good solutions for displaying them. We have, like, a bookshelf in our den right now that we've been using.
Running out of space, though.
Yeah, it's running out of space, for sure. And when, like, Millennium Falcon, for example, I don't know how we're going to display that.
I'm going to have to figure that out, yeah, definitely. Especially, yeah. I got to figure out where to put the, just got a telescope on the way.
Very excited about that telescope.
Got to figure out where to put that, because got to be looking at the rings of Saturn and things like that.
Yes, they need you to look at them. They're just waiting for
I might have a discovery. I might be like, look out, those rings are about to shoot off of Saturn and come to Earth, and I would be the one to blow the whistle and be like, hey, we got to look out for this Saturn thing.
The Saturn rings are starting to look more like hands, and they're reaching out to grasp Earth and make us all crumble.
Jeez, yeah, that's a terrifying concept. Hands, evil hands, you say, like Idle Hands, the 1999 horror film starring Devon Sawa? It just makes me think of that. Oh, you know what? That's a perfect, seamless segue. My goodness, Devon Sawa, did you know he's in Final Destination?
Do you even need me in this podcast?
Your weird podcast, me talking to myself, trying to
congratulating your segues.
Trying to force segues that don't really work, yeah. Yes.
No, that was a great segue.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Devon Sawa, star of 2000's Final Destination.
And star of 2017's Fanatic?
Oh, right, of course.
17, John Travolta, whatever that
he
was.
He played the Limp Bizkit fanatic in that. You want to hear some Limp Bizkit? That guy, he must be into games or something. He's always on Kind of Funny. He's always doing stuff with Miller, and I don't know if he's like a game guy or whatever.
I have absolutely no problem with people who are like really big in the late 90s, early 2000s, just kind of coming, having a comeback on the internet, like Brendan Fraser, for example.
Sure, yeah.
I'm really in favor of this. It's
of course.
Like, it's like everyone just like looking back on their past and be like, hey, this actor that was in this movie at this formative time in my life, I haven't heard from this person in a really long time. I wonder what they're up to.
I feel like that's probably a thing that repeats itself in that, like, remember, like, there was a period maybe in, like, the 2000s where it's like Henry Winkler's showing up everywhere. You know, he's in Arrested Development, and it's like, oh, all of a sudden the Fonz is back. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's this, you know, relic from Happy Days back in, like, the 70s or whatever. Like, I wonder if there is this thing where it's like, oh, yeah, these guys that you watched on TV when they were in their 20s, now they're older guys, but they're having this renaissance. They're coming back. Brendan Fraser. Or things like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I wonder about that. And I also wonder, too, with, like, you know, how there's no more monoculture anymore. You know, how, like, we, like, back in the olden days, families would just gather around ye old radio and listen to the Daily Broadcast. And now there's, like, a bazillion different outlets to get news and information from.
Yeah, it's the thing where it's, like, the next day at work, everyone's talking about, like, what they saw in Carson. Like, did you see that comedian on Carson last night?
Yeah, this is all to say that there's always going to be some kind of niche that would celebrate whatever, quote-unquote, past their prime actor there might be. And I think, too, as people that are, like, people who are familiar with that stuff are getting older and have more money, there's just going to be more of a want for that. I'd like to think that society is moving in the direction where, like, not every piece of media has to just have, like 16 to 22 year olds in it, you know?
Sure.
I feel, and maybe I've been more keen on that as I've been getting older myself, but I noticed that, like, you know, it's not all just teen stuff. Whereas, like, I feel like growing up, it was just like constant teen stuff all the time.
Yeah, but also I wonder if you were just, you saw or were more aware of that stuff growing up because you were taking in.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, you know? I'm kind of saying the same thing about myself now that I'm older. I'm starting to notice older people. But I do think that there is generally a trend. I mean, like, you always used to hear, and I'm sure it's still definitely the case, like, actresses after the age of 30, they're just like, no one wants them anymore. And now, like, there's, you know, we're about to see Halloween Kills, which stars a woman in her 50s?
Yeah.
60s?
Oh, right? I'm sure Jamie Lee Curtis has got to be in her 60s, right?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's great. And yeah, I'd love to go back and, you know, give Devon Sawa a little thumbs up and be like, hey, bro. You did good.
I thought he was good in this. And actually, I'm looking this up right now because we're talking about, you know, these movies appealing to, like, the teen audience and stuff. And I worked at a movie theater. I worked at an AMC when this movie came out in 2000. And I remember this being very popular.
Really?
Amongst, you know, my age group. But then again, it was like, I think it was at that time where it's like, you know, I'm 14, 15, 16 when I'm working at the theater. And I was such a, like, I was so socially anxious and I was not, like, a popular kid. I was not, like, angry loner or anything. I just didn't fit in really necessarily with, like, the popular kids. So, like, that's all to say, I would see all the, like, popular kids coming in to see Final Destination and stuff, and I'd think, like, oh, this probably isn't for me. This seems like a thing that, like, the cool kids in school mm-hmm. go to. Or, like, I just kind of, like, look down my nose at it mm-hmm. a bit, you know? It's like, whatever. I never gave it the time of day, really. And now that I'm thinking about, like, all those teenagers seeing this movie, it's a very violent movie. Mm-hmm. It's, like, pretty gruesome at times, and I'm trying to figure out if this was R, because, like, first, I was like, well, it's got to be R. There are, like, gory, gory scenes here.
There's cursing as well, right?
There is. You can get to, well, you can do, I think, two fucks in a PG-13 movie.
And that's the word fuck, not actual.
Exactly. That, once you get into actual boobs and stuff. So once you see boobs, if it's done artistically, I think you can do in PG-13, like Titanic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a, paint me like a French
what
girl.
About labia majora?
I'm sorry? What is that? I'm going to guess that's an R at
oh,
least.
Oh, no!
What?
You don't know what a labia majora is? I just said that offhand as a joke, but I expected you to know what I'm talking about.
I thought you were referring to a movie.
Oh, okay.
Wait, what are you, what is this? What? Go on. What the hell are you talking about? What? Say it.
It's like the outermost part of the vagina.
Sure, but I thought you were saying, we were talking about movies. Are you saying there's a movie called that?
No,
oh, you're saying if they show that, oh, you gave a
how
very medical.
We were just listing things. We were talking about the action of fucking. We were talking about boobs.
I thought you were saying there was a movie called Labia Majora.
I mean, I'm sure there is. There absolutely is.
In certain video stores. Yes, video stores. Jesus Christ.
It's behind the beaded curtain.
Right, exactly. No, that is, I think you have to go R if it shows that.
I think
so. I think wiener is always an R. Although I think if, the MPAA is insane. I've seen that documentary about it, and it's like they are just this puritanical, like, shitty organization.
I mean, I could understand, like, an erect penis R, of course. But just a flopping penis, like, who cares? You might as well be just looking at it.
I think that's an R.
Like a hand or something. It's just so.
I think that's
like,
an R.
All right, whatever. I'm not going to argue with anyone. I'm not going to use my enormous platform to speak out against flaccid penises or earning movies at hard R.
This is your platform. This is your Riker 2024 show, Floppy Dong on PG-13.
I want flaccid dicks in my PG-13 films.
The point I was getting at was that it is a risky move that I think you would not see today to make this movie that is obviously targeting a teen audience mm-hmm. and make it an R.
Yeah.
Because ultimately at this point, movie companies know you make the same exact movie, make a few cuts to the gore or whatever, mm-hmm. make it a PG-13, you open it up to that audience. And like, because I don't know how strictly that shit's enforced these days. I haven't worked at a theater in mm-hmm. almost 20 years. You know, like, but if you make it an R, it's supposed to be so you can't get in without a parent or guardian. And it's like, well, a movie like Final Destination was probably largely teenagers going to see it, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like you wouldn't see this today where a movie targeted this way would be made R. I feel like they would make whatever dumb cuts they had to make and kind of neuter it a little bit. And, yeah. like, I kind of appreciated that, like, this is a gory movie.
Yeah, we watched that, Woodstock documentary recently about Woodstock 99, and that was a lot of it was about how like the culture was just so angry and like edgy edgelord stuff, and you know, maybe there was an element of that as well, where there's just like for stuff marketed toward teens. I mean, look at MTV Spring Break, that was just nonstop booze and sex and stuff like that, and that was, you know, I imagine teenagers were, you know, the primary consumer of that. I can't imagine a 35-year-old watching that.
Yeah.
Bunch of 16-year-olds roll around in baby oil or whatever shit that show was. But
yeah, but like TV, the thing is, it's like there's no barrier whatsoever. You can just, you know, you could be an 8-year-old flipping through channels and
yeah,
see
yeah,
that.
I get it. I get the barrier too, but, you know, I wonder if there's a value in the mystique that it brings as well.
I could see that, but you also saw back then, like, I know I've brought it up before, but like when the South Park movie came out, it was the same weekend as Wild Wild West, which was PG-13. South Park was a hard R. And tons of the money that Wild Wild West brought in is suspected to be people buying tickets to Wild Wild West and going to see South Park, like teenagers. And as someone who worked at the theater during that time, I definitely saw plenty of people sneaking into South Park.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what we got to see a lot of up close and personal in this movie?
What's that?
Devon Sawa's mouth. It was always open throughout the whole movie.
Really?
Yeah, he's always just like...
she's holding her mouth open and looking in various places in the room right now.
He's always like, and he always has like some weird dingles hanging from his mouth, I noticed.
Dingles?
Yeah, little dingles. And I'm not really sure what they are, but I feel like the movie wasn't made with like 4K TVs in mind, I guess.
Okay.
There's some serious dinglage going on.
I thought he was pretty good in this.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, all right, listen, not great.
But I mean, for this role, I mean, it's not like four-year consideration stuff, but like he was really good for this, you know?
Yeah, I, you know, it's a really weird kind of heady concept for a teen movie, and the parts that like are could have been expanded upon and made into like elevated this movie into like a teen quote-unquote slasher flick into like an actual smart sci-fi movie was just completely glazed over, but it was still very fun.
It's really fun, and here's the thing. So let's explain the concept here real quick. So basically, the beginning big scene is this plane crash where Devon Sawa plays Alex. He has a premonition of a plane crash when all of his school or his class is going on a trip to France.
Can we talk about this for a second?
Yes.
I feel like I haven't seen a lot of movies except for like United 93 or whatever, where it shows the inside of a airplane as it's crashing. And I thought it was really well done in this movie. It was very scary. It happened really quick. You know, that kind of set the stage for the movie in terms of like my expectations for how grounded its presentation would be. Like, it wasn't over the top. It was because of how mundane the plane crash was shown. It was kind of even more effective and eerie that way. You know what I mean?
I made that same note because it's like, you know, I was scrolling through HBO Max. We were looking for something kind of like Halloweenish themed for this month. And I was like, oh, 2000 horror movie. I bet this is going to be filled with some cheesy ass CG and everything. And then that scene, that plane crash, was like, holy shit, this holds up.
Yeah.
Like, there was no egregious CG shots or anything that didn't look good. And I read about how they made it. They made, like, this actual, like, fuselage that they could, like, they had it on a gimlet or I don't know if that's the word for it. They had it on a thing that basically moved it and everything.
They had a tiny lime-based cocktail that they were balancing it on.
Oh, is that what a gimlet is? Or a giblet. I don't know what it is, but they had it on a thingy that made it rock back and forth. And it looked good as hell.
Yeah.
Very, very effective.
So that flight was supposedly influenced by Flight 800 in 1996.
TWA?
It was one of the deadliest flights or airfare disasters in the U.S.
I remember
something
that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But on that plane, 16 students and 5 adult chaperones from the French club of some local high school were on board and died in the events, yes.
Huh, okay. Yeah, and in this, everyone dies that's on the plane.
Yeah.
So it's like it's one of those... Yeah, you used to hear about those air disasters more often, you know? Like, I feel like it's been a while that you've heard of one where it's just like a total malfunction. There was the one that disappeared, like the Malaysian flight.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like you hear about it less often.
Yeah, I think... The thing about plane crashes is they're so infrequent, and whenever something happens, they're able to, I mean, it seems like for the most part, they're able to learn from that and make changes so it doesn't happen again in the future. So maybe that's why we don't hear about it as much. It's, you know, a lot of these things are accounted for. Although there was that time recently with the autopilot system.
The like 737 MAX or whatever, yeah, where it's like, oh, it just like dips the nose down dangerously during takeoff, yeah, or something. Yeah, but then they like grounded all those and
that's,
yeah,
that's good. Yeah. I wonder too, like if you're on a plane and it's going down and, you know, it's like depressurized or whatever. If you pass out, like that's probably the best case scenario, right? You pass out.
That is what I would want.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You pass out and then yeah, you die. You wouldn't know.
It's funny. You, you know, they really, like, this is kind of a longer scene. You really see Devon Sawa kind, uh-huh, of like freaking out about the plane crashing and everything. And you asked me at one point, like, oh, is this weird for you to watch? Because, yeah, I have a lot of anxiety about flights. And I thought, you know what? No, I can relate to this feeling of being really nervous before takeoff and everything. Mm-hmm. But with him, he was worried about the plane crashing. And, like, I've never actually had that worry of the plane crashing. Mine, mm-hmm, is just fearing the panic attack from, like, being clustered in, you know?
We never actually learn what gives him this premonition. It's
That's something I like. That's something I like here is because, okay, so the short version of what this plot is he gets off the plane and he's like, the plane's going to blow up. I had a premonition. And everyone's like, you're crazy. And his friends, like six of them basically get off the plane. Plane does blow up. So he's having these visions of things that are going to happen that wind up happening and people wind up dying. And my worry was about like halfway through that, like, especially at one point we meet Tony Todd, who is known as the Rocket Man in The Rock. And he's also Candyman. He shows up and he's got a very distinct look and voice and everything. Yes. I think he's a great character actor. I started worrying that, like, are we going to make it this thing where, like, oh, by the end they found out that, oh, Devon Sawa was in the school library and he found this dusty old book with tomes and Latin on it and he said, mm-hmm, the wrong thing. I thought they were going to overexplain it or make Tony Todd, this mortician, like this like literal Grim Reaper type character, whatever. But it just kind of hints at it. It just hints the concept of death is going after and taking out these people that were supposed to die on the plane. It was their time. And since they cheated death by getting off the plane, they're dying in all these other ways. I thought it was going to get way more cheesy and literal, yeah, where it was like actual, like there is like a horror movie villain chasing them or something. But no, it's just, it's household items. It's happenstance. It's things like, you know, kitchens and electrical equipment and things like that, that are the threat. And I think that makes it so much cooler rather than just like some, you know, the 900th like movie bad guy chasing someone.
Yeah. If you can suspend the part of your brain that makes you wonder about things like, why did you have the premonition? Like why, you know, if you think about it, you're probably cheating death 20 times a day. You know, yeah, what I mean? Why this time? You know what I mean? And trying to figure out how he was able to deduce just based on looking at a seating chart and reading a bunch of stuff that like, oh, it has to be death itself that's coming after us. If you can look past all that stuff, it's a cool concept. The idea of an unseen antagonist is very cool and very effective for tension. I mean, yeah, what was the name of that, sweetheart? What was the name of that movie? The Stephen King movie in the supermarket that we watched. We watched it for PTA.
Oh, The Mist. The Mist, yeah. Yeah, The Mist was great.
Yeah, it was kind of similar to that. Like, you don't exactly know what's going on for a while in that movie.
Yeah, and then it turns out it's like crazy, like, Lovecraft monsters.
Yeah, yeah, it's wild. But like Blair Witch, you know, mm-hmm, what I mean? It's like a lot of those movies, a lot of really effective horror movies do that where they don't show you. And in this case, it's completely unseen throughout the whole thing. It's like the very force of death. It's not like, yeah, a literal cloaked Grim Reaper that's coming after them.
Yeah, and it made me think that it would be really fun to watch this in theaters because, like, once you kind of know the deal that, like, oh, death is coming and it's going to be some normal thing, mm-hmm, I bet they play with that in this movie so much where it's like, okay, so one of the first deaths post the plane crash is his friend Todd. And he's in there. First of all, he sucks at shaving. He's in his bathroom. Literally, like, he's like, okay, getting out my thing. About to do my first. I was like, ah, blood. Just like, he just instantly cuts his neck, you, uh-huh, know? And so he cuts his neck shaving. And I feel like it knows what it's doing. And it constantly, like, shows you all these things. Like, which one's it going to be? Mm-hmm. Oh, is it going to be, is he going to cut his neck shaving? Nope. No, oh, the toilet water. That's leaking something here. What's going on there?
The plug and the water. It's going to electrocute him.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah. He was, like, plugging in the radio. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it's going to be that. And then it's like, while this is happening, Devon Sawa is reading a penthouse and an owl runs into his window, mm-hmm, causing him to blah, throw the penthouse into a fan and it chops it up. And then the piece of paper says Todd that lands on him. Like, I love that. You super know Todd's going to die here.
Yes.
You know, and it shows you like six things that it's not. And then it's like, what does he trip on the water?
He trips on the side of the shower and then like some kind of cord gets wrapped around his neck and strangles him.
Yeah, it does this like shower cable thing, which I feel like I've seen in movies that thing where it's like you pull out like a retractable like cord thing. Because I remember Sean Connery does that when he's a, when you're going to San Francisco, and he's in the Rock and he's like singing, he's like, oh, room service, yeah, you got any snacks? You know, like that thing. You know that scene when he's in the hotel and all the FBI guys are out there? It's like, oh, look at all this room service. It just showed up. And he takes the shower cord thing and he like uses it to, oh, he grabs Wilmack's hand, throws him over the edge, you know. But what the fuck is that cable? It's in the Rock. It's in this. Is this something they stopped making? I've never seen a cable in a shower. What could that be for?
Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea.
Let us know.
Yeah. I really appreciate about this movie how intricate all the death scenes are. It's never just like... Yes. They got hit by, well, in one case, the person got hit by a car.
By a bus.
Yeah, like literally vaporized by a bus.
Out of nowhere, too. Because like the other ones, some of them are super duper telegraphed where it's like, okay, just how are they going to die? We know they're about to. This one, Carter's girlfriend is just like, all right, see ya. And just plop and blood splatter all over. It's like a fucking MacGruber wedding.
It is
blood
like that.
Splatter. I love that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's never just one thing, though. Like, obviously, Todd's death, we were just talking about. Miss Luton.
Oh, that was my favorite. That was when I realized I think I kind of love this movie. Yeah, so the teacher, who is the director and or the writer and producer's wife, is the actress. Okay, so everyone's kind of suspecting Alex after, like, he's like, the plane's going to blow up, and then the plane blows up. And everyone's like, wait a minute.
That's so weird that people would suspect him. Can you imagine? I'd be like, dude, I'm so sorry. They probably feel horrible survivor's guilt. Can you imagine? And then people are turning their fingers on him, saying it's his fault?
I think the thought was because it's like the FBI gets involved. Which, by the way, one of the FBI agents is the guy who plays Jay Leno in that Late Shift movie that we watched recently.
I knew he looked familiar.
Yeah. I think they're just like, oh, you were talking about the plane blowing up and then it did. Why? You must have known something. Were you involved? Mm-hmm. Is basically what they're saying here. But yeah, they suspect him. And where was I going from there? So the teacher. She suspects him because he just kind of keeps being around the scene of this stuff.
Yeah, like with his mouth open, just like one lurking around.
He's at the scene of Todd's death outside the house. Do coroner vans have giant impact font coroner letters on the side? I don't think I've ever seen a van driving around with coroner in giant letters.
I don't think I've seen that either, but they might. We just might not be around a lot of coroners.
That's true. So she suspects him, and so she sees him, like, to be fair to her, he is creepily just standing around her driveway at night.
Yes.
And so she calls the FBI, Agent Shrek, and tells him to show up. And okay, I think I wrote down most of the things that befall her here. First of all, a lot of people in the year 2000 listening to John Denver. A lot of people listening to Rocky Mountain High in Long Island 2000. Because at the beginning, he's in the airport bathroom. And he's like, John Denver died on a plane crash. That's a creepy coincidence. Mm-hmm. But then throughout the entire movie, it's like they'll be in other countries and there's a street performer doing like Rocky Mountain High. It's like, what the fuck are we doing? Why is everyone listening to John Denver?
Yeah, that's confusing.
So she's listening to John Denver. She's all nervous. She makes a drink, right? She makes like a cocktail drink.
First, she tries to make some tea.
Yes, and then what happens? She is, as soon as they showed the tea kettle, I was like, oh, I bet the tea kettle, something's going to go on here. And they do like some weird effect stuff, like some weird smoky stuff. Like, they make it seem like the tea kettle's going to explode. I don't know how tea kettles work. Mm-hmm. But then she throws the mug and screams or throws the water out. What was that?
I think that she heard something or saw something at the corner of her eye. Because remember, whenever someone was about to die in this movie, well, in most cases, I remember, there'd be this like weird kind of black haze.
Yeah.
So I think she saw that. But there was a lot of steps. There was the tea kettle. There was the
pilot light.
The pilot light not lighting. So she had to use a match to manually do it.
I thought it might blow up there.
I thought it might blow up. She had the hand towel draped over the knives right next to the lit flame, which I thought that was going to catch on fire. And then, you know, I mean, the knives do come into the, story later. But
of course, she spills, you know, the old classic, spilling vodka into your computer monitor.
Oh, yeah. She had hot coffee or hot tea in the cup before throwing it out. And then she put ice cubes. She's a teacher. Doesn't she know? She put ice cubes and vodka, like cold right after hot. It just cracks the mug and it starts leaking and leaves trail. Yeah.
Oh, so if you make it like if a mug goes from cold to hot too fast, will it crack?
I don't know if you could like reliably reproduce it, but I think in some cases...
Oh, so was it leaking the whole way?
Yes.
Okay, so I thought, because at one point, so the computer monitor blows up and shoots a shard of glass, like, into her neck, basically. And then this fire from the explosion follows the whole trail to the kitchen. Yeah. I thought that was, like, her blood. And I was like, wait, are they saying her blood had enough alcohol in it to be flammable?
No, it was the vodka straight up.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That actually makes... Okay, well, this all makes sense. Okay. But then the pilot light does explode. Mm-hmm. And then The knives. Okay, she's laying on the ground, already seemingly like dead. She's got like a shard in her neck, and things have exploded. She reaches up to grab. Why does she want the towel? Is she want to make a tourniquet?
Yeah, put pressure on her neck wound or something.
Okay, and that's over the giant thing of super sharp knives. So that falls. A kitchen knife, like butcher knife, falls into her heart directly, and then a chair falls onto the top of the knife to just kind of push it in there more. This is full on Rube Goldberg like insanity, and that's the point where I realize this movie gets what it's doing. It knows it's leaning into the silliness. Yeah, I think
totally absurd.
And then of course Alex runs in and he pulls the knife out, and again looking like the most suspicious person on the planet. He's like sitting there holding a bloody knife, running out of the house. Stifler's out there like, "Alex, what are you doing?" As he's holding a bloody knife and the house is exploding. It's like, okay, this is going to take some explaining.
Yeah.
That was, I think that was my favorite scene in the entire movie.
It was a great scene. Classic.
Yes. I did like a couple of quick asides. Carter at the ceremony thing where they're unveiling the Hawk statue, just being like, "I'm never going to die." Just full on Team America. Like, "I will never die."
Stupid 18-year-old idiot.
That guy, whoever that guy was, he played that well. Just his butthead.
He was such an asshole. And he tried to kill everyone at one point in the movie. And then later on, everyone's just like having coffee and tea with him in France or whatever. Like totally chill with him.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I liked Ali Larter describing the sculpture.
Oh, you mean Clear Rivers?
Yes, of course. Clear Rivers, of course. describing her art.
Oh my God. Do you remember what she said?
It's like the lamps. Like, oh, it's like a representation of your head. Or it's like, it's not accurate. It's a bunch of mystery wrapped up.
It's
in
attraction and repulsion in one. It doesn't have an identity. It is everything. It is everywhere. It is my art, and it is my love for you.
You've seen a lot of art critique. Is this accurate?
I don't know. It just looked like a bunch of trash.
Yeah, I did. So like somewhere like after the teacher death is when he surmises from a news report, which by the way, this news report that shows they're like, "Oh, we finally figured out what made the plane blow up. Something with the electrical thing happened here. And then the explosion, like it's such a detailed thing to show on the like nightly news of like this accurate line between seats showing what order the explosion, they would have just been like, "Oh, it was caused by an electrical thing or whatever, you know?" But he takes, he somehow like brings it into MS Paint or something and is able to overlay it and be like, "Okay, so I was sitting here and then," but it's a plane explosion. It's not like, I don't know. I thought that logic, that was kind of harder to like, I don't need to suspend my disbelief in something this goofy.
Yeah.
But that was just, it seemed so forced.
It was very forced. And that was like the basis for which he figured out who was next and everything. So the fact that that was such a critical part of the plot was, and it like had no merit whatsoever, was very head scratching.
That was my least favorite part of the movie, is because like, yeah, the whole like back half of the movie is him being like, "Well, I have to interrupt the order we were supposed to die in because that'll negate," like, I don't understand how he gets to that conclusion.
I don't either.
Where it's like, "Oh, if I make him die first, or if I save him, then it's going to reset the order or go to skip to the next person."
It's just a really weird assumption.
Yeah.
It's like a big, like, if that happened to you, like, you wouldn't then think like, "Oh, this person's next and this person's next." Like, it wouldn't, there's no like single line you could draw from one thing to the next. It's just like a random occurrence.
Yeah. And they do kind of like make it seem like he's going nuts. You know, at one point he's in this like cabin and he's like obsessing over, you know, cheating death and stuff. So like, I guess you could argue that, like, oh, he wasn't right. He's just obsessively trying to figure out some sort of, like, way to stop this thing from happening.
Yeah,
but he seems to be right, though, right?
He seems to be right. It's not really even clear why it stops. And then at the end, it kind of comes back again at the very end. But it would have been so cool if they really went into, like, him kind of losing his mind, but, like, never really addressed it explicitly, just kind of have him kind of losing it a little bit.
Yeah, and there are five of these movies. I don't know if he's in all of them, and I don't know if, like, I hope that it wouldn't, like, go deeper into that stuff and over-explain things, but, like, I wonder what they do with that. I don't know what the general consensus is about, like, oh, the first one's good, but then the rest suck. Like, you know, but...
Yeah, I would imagine that something like this would be at risk of over-explaining, because if there are that many movies, they're probably going to want to really get into it.
Yeah, it's like what I hear about like Highlander 2 and like the sequels where it's like, we don't need to know all this, you know?
What was that, Happy Death Day 2?
Yes, we liked the first one.
The first one was nice. The second one was just so stupid.
What was the gimmick?
She just like, she was trying to, it was, the whole movie was just her like, it was like a weird science thing and she had to go and figure it out. Not a weird science as in the movie, but strange science thing.
Yeah, there was some like science experiment in college doing a thing. I can't remember if it just like, it explained it too much in the first one.
It explained too much and it wasn't as fun as the first one.
Yeah, yeah. there is the train track thing where Carter stops on the train tracks and mm-hmm. is like, all right, well, I'm going to die here. And then he gets pulled out. The thing that sticks with me about that scene is, so fucking Stifler is in this, and they're all standing around. They're all friends. They're all trying to make it through together. Stifler gets his fucking half his head chopped off by a train, runs over like jagged metal from the car that gets destroyed, flies through his head directly in front of him. Like, you see the top of Stifler's head just fucking rolling in front of them. I don't even think they acknowledge it. They no-sell their friend 3 feet away having the most grisly death in the entire movie. They're like, oh, okay, well, I wonder if that screwed up the order. Okay, well, anyway, let's leave.
Like, well, and then there was another time where Clear and Alex are, like, on the beach or whatever, and she's telling him this really traumatic story about how her father died, and then her mother just kind of became, like, a waste product. And Alex does not say a single word in response.
I forgot about that.
He's just like looking away, like with his head in his arms. It's just...
Want to get some Wendy's? You're right. She has like a whole, like, this is her monologue. This is her big, like, audition, you know, part. You know, like, there's no follow-up at all. I, speaking of Clear Rivers, of course, the end, I thought the end was one of the weaker parts, because it's like, I guess we're just at Allie Larder, Clear Rivers' house, and just the whole house is like kind of... All the good things about the teacher's death scene, where it's like, okay, this is ridiculous, but it's all kind of connected. I think they did everything wrong here. Where they do that, where it's like, oh, there's turpentine falling on the floor. There's like all these bad things. There's an electric wire flopping around everywhere. And then like a swimming pool floods and there's water everywhere. It just seems way more chaotic in a bad way, where it's just like, wait, why is this why is she climbing this side of the house? Why is this wire flopping around everywhere? Is there's a storm going on? I guess this beam is flying through the car windshield. I just felt like there was just a bunch of shit happening.
It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, whereas like I think the teacher in the house was way more focused. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
And then, yeah, I guess the whole point of that there is for him to try to interrupt the thing. He valiantly, you know, tries to interrupt the process, and he lives. I guess there's an alternate ending where he dies, and she gives birth to a baby named Alex. That's like an alternate
Did
ending.
Did they even get it on at any point in this movie?
I didn't even know if they were supposed to be together, except for there's one part, I think, near the end where he's like, all right, let's get out of here. And he, like, you know, grabs her shoulder. Or it's like maybe them in Paris later on. He, like, you know, grabs her shoulders in a, like, datey kind of way or something. But there's certainly no real tension or acknowledgement there.
And she says at one point in the movie that he hadn't said a single word to her for all of high school, all 4 years of high school, and now all of a sudden they're talking.
Huh. Oh, I guess, you know, they went through that traumatic experience there, you know?
Yeah, but come on.
Yeah.
Not Allie Larder is going untalked to in high school? Come on.
Well, Devin Sawa and his dingleberries, you know, how are you going to say no to that shit hanging
off
his mouth?
I'm all about those dingles, man.
That's what you always say. Then the last scene is 6 months later, they finally get to Paris, and I knew the second they go to Paris, where it's like, there is a very deliberate shot of this giant, ornate, very electrical, old-timey sign at, like, above the cafe. It's like, oh, someone's getting crushed by that thing. Like, that is way too deliberate of a shot. And sure, they're just sitting around a cafe being like, oh, crazy, we cheated death, huh? Oh, maybe not. And then the fucking bus crash thing happens, and then, like, somehow the sign gets knocked down. And
that's the thing. It's like, what exactly was the conclusion to this movie? Because
That you can't escape death.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, so it's like they're going to be living in terror forever, I guess?
Mean, there's five movies.
For it's five, like, movies worth of terror?
I am curious about those. I'm curious about the sequels. I don't know if I'll go and watch them all or anything, but I just wonder how you keep that going. I remember hearing people talk about when, like, 3 and 4 and stuff were coming out, people explaining to me that the joy of these movies was those scenes, like, just waiting to see what ridiculous fucking circumstances these people die in. And I remember, like, the poster or whatever for 3 is like all these people on a roller coaster, or like the trailer should, like, some crazy roller coaster disaster. Like, I could see the fun in that of just like, okay, well, you see a Halloween movie, you know Michael Myers is going to be killing a bunch of people.
Right.
With this, I feel like every new one you could go in just being like, look, I don't know how these motherfuckers are going to die, but a lot of people are going to die in hilarious ways.
Yeah, and it seems to me like the deaths are always, it's never like a person murdering someone. It's always like...
death.
Yeah, like a terrible consequence, or, you know, bad timing or whatever.
Yeah, and I gotta say again, despite being in 2000, this movie marketed towards teens in 2000, the CG, like, it doesn't feel as aggressively 2000 as I thought it was gonna be. I thought it was gonna be way cheesier, way more bad effects and everything. Like, it's actually aged pretty well.
Maybe you like it so much because you were a teen in 2000.
I did not like being a teen in 2000. I was not a fan of that. I was seeing movies for adults like Fight Club, man. I was learning about philosophy.
Hell yeah.
I thought I was. That's 16. Turns out, yeah.
Yeah, well, I told you about my Ayn Rand phase in high school, oh, so boy. I think I got you beat there.
Sure. And you know what? We were all teenagers at some point.
I wouldn't ask people how they were doing if they asked me how I was doing, because I thought it didn't really affect me at all how they were doing.
Oh, boy.
Just so, like, aggressively shitty.
We were probably very inseparable at times.
Yeah, really bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, you get older, you get wiser, you get
a little better, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. And that's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get better.
Yeah. I like this. I straight up enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
Yep. It was unique in a way I did not expect it to be. I don't think I gave it enough credit.
Yeah, it's one of those movies I've always heard about. I just kind of wrote it off as being like, oh, it's probably some stupid, you know, brainless movie. And it is that to an extent, but it's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, yeah. So that is Final Destination. We watched it on HBO Max. I think a lot, if not all of them, are on HBO Max, if you're curious. But yeah, thumbs up. And I also want to give a thumbs up to our patrons on patreon.com/paintingthestream.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. I was stifling a weird hiccup and burp thing that whole time.
Yeah, I hear little burps and hiccups permeate all of your dialogue.
Yeah. This is the bonk move. Bonk. You sit on the couch and you'll just go, sorry. sorry. Just like one quick one and then sorry.
Well, sometimes I like burp when I yawn and it makes that weird noise.
Yes.
I can't even do it. It's really weird.
Yes. But yes, thumbs up to, you know what's not weird? Going to patreon.com/paintingthestream and doing our little thing there. It's a simple little Patreon. It's $5 a month.
That's it.
It's ad-free episodes.
Wow.
Access to the Discord.
Wow.
Early episodes.
Wow.
And for you, you get written for you by Bonk. Hey, Bonk who? Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we got?
This week, we are honoring our friend Bevan.
Bevan!
I assume it's Bevan. It could be Bevan. I'm not sure. But please just accept Bevan for now. You're Bevan forever. That's it. It's a rule.
In terms of painting this room, you're Bevan. Yes.
No. Life,
just, okay,
everything.
All right. Please inform your family and friends.
I'm Bevan now.
Just send a mass text to everyone in your contacts. I'm Bevan now. But it would be spelled
now
the same, so everyone would just be like, unless you change the spelling, they'd be like, yeah, no, you've always been Bevan.
All right. Bevan's reflection showed someone who was not there, a vacant shadow.
Okay, but Bevan could be all right. It's just the shadow that's the problem.
I don't know. Maybe he was never there at all.
Well, that's for Bevan to know and us to assume. Folks! Thank you, Bevan. hey, thanks for listening, everyone. A patron or no, we enjoy having folks to
just say it.
Well, I was about to say folks to chat to about the stuff we watch, but it's really not a chat. We're just talking to the microphones and each other.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, but we appreciate being able to go into your
I wish I could
earbuds.
Talk about the movie with you.
Yeah, well, we got a Discord. You can get in the Painting the Stream section of the Discord there, and you can absolutely chat about these movies. Yes, but thank you to everyone listening. Bonk, thank you for joining me each and every week.
You are very welcome.
Tom Honda, thanks for the theme song.
Thank you.
We'll see you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.